Mashiach is the Zecher Nishmas, so the Old Abbas Alter Yisrael. So this past Friday night, we were eating our soup. I have to just preface by saying it was not my wife did not make the soup. So it's not relevant to the shiloh part, it's relevant to the background part. So it was somebody else's soup. And some people around the table were commenting that maybe it needed a little bit of a kick to it, a little bit of a spice to it. So that's why it wasn't my wife's soup. No one would ever complain about that. So somebody wanted to put in some spices. So one of the spices that was in discussion was putting in was some kind of a peppery spice. So all of a sudden, wow, that's a whole lamda shashayla about putting spices, putting pepper, putting all these kinds of things into soups on Shabbos. Is that a potential problem of bishul, that you're actually cooking the spices? So what is it then? So we'll try to use that as a little bit of a springboard to talk about, not just about spices and soup, but in general about some of the rules that govern hilchos bishul b'shabbos, again, with the specific applications of this particular scenario. So the sugi begins with the first of the Ma'ar Mekomos. It's a Gemara in Masechah Shabbos, Daf Mem Amud Beis. Amar Rav Yitzchak Rav Adimi. Pam achas nechnasti achar Rebbe lebeis hamerchatz. I once followed Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi into the Beis Hamerchatz, literally into the bathhouse on Shabbos. You're probably wondering, what in the world was Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi doing in the bathhouse on Shabbos? You're not supposed to be bathing on Shabbos. So the answer is not so simple. Actually, the Gemara tells us in that context of that sugya, in the olden days, people used to bathe on Shabbos, as long as the water was heated up from before Shabbos. What's wrong? If I cook chulin before Shabbos, I'm not eating on Shabbos. So if I cook the water from before Shabbos, why can't I bathe in hot water on Shabbos?
Isn't something about
speaker? Oh, we're going to get to it as we go on. So the Gemara says that in the olden days, people used to do that. It was het gomer. The problem was that the people who were in charge of the bathhouses, they weren't necessarily the firmest people around. And sometimes they would get a lot of extra business on Friday night. And they only prepared X amount of water. And they realized, we don't want to tell our customers that we don't have enough water for them. So behind the scenes, they would quickly go add more water to the fire, i.e. violating an Israel Bishul Derais. These were Jewish bathhouse attendants. So when the Chacham got wind of this, they realized we're assisting Chil Shabbos Deraisa. So they said, that's it. No more bathing on Shabbos, even if the water is heated up from before. Then people used to still come to the bathhouses, not to heat up, not to sit in the tubs, but as part of the bathhouse, they would also have the schwitzes, they would have the saunas, they have the steam rooms, so lahaziyah. So what could be wrong with that? So then Chazal realized, well, some people were walking in, telling everybody, oh, we're just going to steam, we'll go to the steam room. They would go to the bathhouse, they could heat us up a little more water on the side, no one is looking. And then you would see a guy coming out of the dripping from the hot tub. He would say, oh, what a good sweat I had there. So the kids are one thing led to the next, and Chazal realized it is not working. And finally, the days of Yehuda Hanossi, they banned bathhouses for Gamri and Shabbos, and that's what's called Gezeres HaBalonim. So a Balon means a bathhouse attendant. So those Mechal Shabbos got a special Gezeres named after them, called Gezeres HaBalonim. In the context of that sugi, the Gemara talks, at least according to some Rishonim, about the possibility of banning bathing on Yontif as well. That's already a whole other topic, another loaded controversial topic, which is a little bit more difficult to understand, because what was wrong with bathing on Yontif? After all, presumably you're allowed to heat up water for washing on Yontif. You're allowed to heat up water to drink on Yontif. Why can't you heat up water to wash on Yontif? That was a very, very controversial discussion. So part of that discussion, somebody should add in that factor that was mentioned, that maybe Chazal had other reasons why they didn't like the bathing. Maybe there's chita problems and other problems, a whole array of different things could go wrong in a bathhouse on Shabbos and or Yontif. And therefore Chazal just shut it down, legamre, even if some of the reasons didn't necessarily apply to Yontif. But the bottom line is that in the days of Yehuda Hanossi, they were still bathing. They were still going to the Shvitz, to the Beis HaMerchatz on Shabbos. So one of the Talmidim of Rebbe says, he accompanied Rebbe into the Beis HaMerchatz. V'kashti la'nich lo pach shel shemen b'yambati. And I wanted to give him some oil to help anoint to smear on himself. And I wanted to heat it up for him. So I wanted to take the jug of oil and put it into the hot tub on Shabbos. Amali, he said to me, don't do that. Tol b'klisheni v'tein. Rather than putting it into the tub itself, the tub was what we call the halacha kli rishon. The kli rishon refers to anything that's on the fire, or at least at one time was on the fire. So in the bathhouses, so they had fires underneath the ground, they had boards over them, and there were areas where they would heat up the tubs. So the water in the tub had the status of what's called the kli rishon. It's a little like a giant trolling pot, so to speak. So if you're going to put the container of oil, you're going to put the jug of oil into the pot, into the tub, that's going to be cooking in a kli rishon. So that was prohibited on Shabbos. What he told him to do is take some of the hot water out of the tub, pour it into another bowl or something, it'll become a klisheni. At that point, you can put the cold, uncooked oil in. So the Gemara says, Shema min atlas. So from this story, we can derive three different halachas. Shema min Hashem and Yeshua Mishum Bishul. So chiddush number one is that the Isra Bishul applies to oil. Maybe one would have thought that oil is not subject to Bishul for various technical reasons. One possible reason is because you can really use it even if it's not hot. It's not like a raw kind of a food. That's one possibility. But Lamaisa, you see from the story that Yeshem and Yeshua Mishum Bishul. This is the most important for our topic. You see that once you transfer the water to a klisheni, to a second utensil, to another bowl, then the Isra Bishul falls by the wayside. And the third thing we learn is, how hot would this oil have gotten in the first place? It wouldn't have gotten to boiling. It would have simply gotten warm. So warming up oil, even though it's not literally boiling, that's also enough to be a violation of Bishul. Those are the three things that we can derive from the story. So the part that's most relevant for us is that middle statement, cliche to enema vasho. So basically the Gemara says in one fell swoop that you could take raw food such as oil and put it into a cliche. As long as you're not putting it into a pot, you're putting it into something which is ready one time removed. So everything's good. Ain babu shum bishum. So if you take this Gemara at face value, our entire shiur is over. It's 8:26. We're done for the shiur already today because nobody is eating out of a pot. Very sheepish way of eating. No one's eating the soup out of the pot. The soup was transferred to at least to a bowl. So if it's in the bowl is at least a klisheni. And a klisheni, even if the pepper and the spices wasn't cooked yet, so what? Toba klisheni v'tei. The klisheni ain b'mishum bishum. So not so fast. Because there is a sugya in the second of the Ma'amar Kamos. It's a mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbos. Kol sheba b'chamin v'erev Shabbos. Anything that was already in hot water from before Shabbos, which basically means it was already cooked from beforehand. Shown us Abacham b'Shabbos, then you're allowed to put it back into hot water on Shabbos. This is the illustration of the principle called Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Once something was cooked, it's no longer subject to another cooking. V'chol shelo b'Abacham b'Erev Shabbos, something that was never cooked from before Shabbos. Madichros Abacham b'Shabbos, then you're allowed to pour hot water onto it. It's not clear where this hot water is coming from exactly, but you're allowed to pour hot water onto it. But the following kinds of foods, even that's off limits. Chutz min ha-maliach ha-yoshon, which refers to little salty kinds of fish, some herrings, sardines, things like that. The kuyas ispin is some other kind of a fish food. The Mishnah says that there are certain kinds of foods, apparently very soft, very small kinds of foods that are very easily cooked. And even if it's not literally in a kli rishon, it's already pouring out of another kli, that's potentially a problem. This is the principle in the halach, what's called Kale Habishul. So Kale Habishul means easily cooked foods. So basically what this Mishnah is doing is putting the brakes on the first source. The first source said, Ein Bishul B'Kli Sheini, no problem whatsoever. Not so simple. When is that true? For most foods, like oil, other kinds of things. But those foods which are Kale Habishul, so, and it makes a lot of sense. If it's so easily cooked, then presumably you don't need such an intense heat. If it's so easily cooked, even a lesser degree of heat, even a one Shabu kind of heat, will be sufficient to affect the bishul. So these two sugyas, number one and number two, create for us the basic two principles in halacha, the cliche the edim of asher, yes, but chashash of kali bishul is a problem.
So Mara is saying that bishul has nothing to do with heat or temperature.
So I'm not sure I would say nothing to do with it, but it's not only to do with it. That this is Tosfos has an observation, but like a Shabbos, you can have a situation where a klisheni is actually can potentially be hotter than a kli rishon. You can have a pot that's been sitting on the fire for not that long, and it's only reached to 170 degrees. You can have another pot that's at 212, and then you pour some of it into a bowl, and it's now at 205, and the first pot is a problem because it's a kli rishon, and the second pot, and the second bowl, is mutta because it's a kli sheni. So Tosfos raises that phenomenon. How could that be? So Tosfos says, yeah, it's true. That's the type of it did. Tosfos tries to explain a little bit why that's so. Tosfos says that although the water in the klisheni may be hotter than a parallel kli rishon, but it has something else going for it, namely the defanos makaros. The walls of the kli are cooling down. So whereas the water in the kli rishon is still hot, the water in the klisheni is hot, it may even be hotter, but it's going down. The trajectory is going down. I always give this as a mashal. Like in Ruchnias, you can have two people, they're pretty much at the same level in terms of Ruchnias. This person davens three times a day, this person learns daf yomi, everyone's doing the same thing. The only difference is one guy never used to daven, and now Baruch Hashem he davens all the time. He never used to learn. Now he's learning daf yomi. The other guy used to daven an hour shmeres, right? And he used to learn 14 hours a day, and now he's learning for 15 minutes in the morning. So they're both at the same point, except one's going up, one's going down. So there's a big difference between the two. So the bottom line is that klisheni edem avashel, but kali abishel is a problem. What are some examples of kali abishel? So the Mishnah gives us really only two. The herrings and the little fishes, those kinds of things. So the Shulchan Aruch in the third of the Mamikom is quotes an opinion from one of the Rishonim, the Sefer Yoreim. So Yoreim is written by Rabbi Lazan and Mitz. It was a Talmud of Rabbi Natam. So if Yoreim has the following statement. Yesh bisha oimer. There are those who say, the Dovash Nefo Nitzla, something that was already baked. Now remember we learned that Ein Bishol Achabishol. So first thing Rabbi Lazan and Mitz says is, yes, that's true, Ein Bishol Achabishol, but Yesh Bishol Achar Afia. Something that was baked, and now it's subsequently cooked, that's a problem in halacha. If you go ahead and take a baked item, take a piece of bread, or something that was roasted, then you cook it in water, therefore, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from Rabbi Lazar Mitzvah, therefore, you're not allowed to take a piece of bread, or a bread crouton, or a piece of matzah or something, and put it into not just a pot of soup, you're not even permitted to put it into a bowl of soup, into a klisheni. Why is that? So Rabbi Lezbivit says, because bread is a chashash of kali habishul. That's a double chumra. Chumra number one is yesh bishlach rafiyah, which you have to Hashem say is not true. And even in terms of yesh bishlach rafiyah, but kabbalah, it's a klisheini, and it should be mutter. No, it's a suffix of a kali habishul. How do you know what is a kali habishul, what's not kali habishul? So say if your Reim says, we have no way of knowing. Chazal, give us the category. They give us two examples and leave us hanging. Says Rabbi Lezbivit, everything, you have to assume the worst. Everything is a suffix kali habishul to prove otherwise. It's okay, oil. Oil we know is not. What about bread? I have no idea. Says the Shulchan Aruch v'yesh matirin. There are those who say that it's permissible. Says the Ramah b'klisheini. Some permit it. This is a quote from the Tor that is permitted to put the bread into the bowl of soup, not into the pot of soup, because the Tor and their first opinion accept fundamentally yesh bishlach rafia, but they say the chumrah of kali bishlach is a little bit too much. V'yesh b'kiyum afilu b'klivishon. There are some who say even in the klivishon is mutter because they deny the entire chumrah. They say ein bishlach rafia. Says the Ramah, the correct practice, what the custom is not to put bread into a klisheni on Shabbos, basically to follow, at least on the lechatchila level, to follow the two chumras of Rav Lezvi Mitz. So if we follow Rav Lezvi Mitz, what we're basically saying is that we don't know what our kali habishul. And therefore, bread is the potential kali habishul, even in a klisheni, has to be avoided. What are some other examples of food, some practical examples of things that are kali habishul that we would refrain from using in putting into a klisheni? So there's a very famous Mishnah Berurah, the fourth of the Marmakamos. The Mishnah Berurah gives you a whole shiklali about the following topic. It's spelled tes yud yud aleph. That's exactly what it means. Te. So the apti divide din bishul ali hate hashach b'kamin yom sivzeh. Right smack in the middle of simin yishin shin yuches, which is the simin about bishul and Shabbos. Mishnah Berurah gives you a long story about how to and how not to make tea on Shabbos. So the whole making of tea was something that you will not find in the Rishonim. You will not find in the Gemara, which found in the Rishonim for a very simple reason, that the Rishonim never saw tea. Tea didn't make its way from that part of the world, from China until to Europe, till much, much later in history. That's where there are certain foods that you won't find. You'll find no discussion in the Rishonim about coffee. You'll find no discussion in the Rishonim about chocolate. You'll find no discussion in the Rishonim about tea, because none of the Rishonim ever saw any of these foods. But in the later postgame, all of a sudden, these things became very popular as the mid centuries, the 1500s, 1600s continued. And now the later Rechavaranim have a lot to talk about them. So one of the topics that the Mishnah Berurah talks about is the make of tea on Shabbos. Hinei, itei b'Shabbos pashut b'poskim t'yeshu b'shum bishul. It is obvious. All the postgame say if you make tea, that is an iser bishul derais made yeshu iser skila b'shogei chayev chatos. It's not even a shaila, says Mishnah Berurah. The making of tea, cooking up tea leaves is an issa deraisa. The tea leaves are not cooked beforehand. You're taking raw tea leaves, putting them into a pot of water. You can't get more, but it's like cooking a raw chicken. It's like cooking a raw egg on Shabbos. Belishim Sofek, that is an absolute issa deraisa. Our tea bags today are nothing more than tea leaves of the Mishnah Berurah just put into a nice little bag so it won't end up all over your it's like when the tea bag opens up and you get the tea leaves all over the place. That's what tea looked like in the days of the Mishnah Berurah. So we have advanced to the point where we have these little perforated little baggies, but the tea leaves are the same. They have not yet been cooked. So therefore, making tea in the classic, you know, literally in a pot, so to speak, would be an absolute isadir answer. Says the Mishabura, it's very tragic. Many people are not aware of this. They rely on different leniencies that are absolutely wrong. Okay, I have to explain to you what you're allowed to do in Allah. Hine, laros bikli rishon ali hatei. If a person pours hot water from a tea kettle, from your good old fashioned chaydik, so for those under the age of 30, so that was a tea kettle, now called an urn. But in the old days, it was simply just a little pot sitting that whistled when it was ready. So to take water from the chaydik, from the tea kettle, and pour it on top of the tea leaves, yesh bazeh bevadei chashash av malacha. There's a little bit of a contradiction in terms. There's for sure a chashash of a malacha. Chashash means we're not sure. So why does Mishnah Berurah coin such a strange phrase? Because he's well aware of the Mishnah Berurah, the fact that there's one dead Mishnah that says it's okay. The Shita says Rashbam. Rashbam says you're allowed to take boiling water from a pot and pour it onto a raw food. And that's perfectly mutter on Shabbos, but we don't pass like that at all. So therefore, the Mishnah Berurah didn't want to come out outright and say that it's absolute chayef skila, because there is one lone opinion Mishnah Berurah that says it's mutter. But since we don't pass like that, the Mishnah doesn't want to give it too much credibility. The Kaimel, because we pass in the Irim of Ashok, the Klipa, the Kamam, the Sifyud, we pass in that when you pour hot water from a Klivishon onto something, that's not Klisheni. That's what we call Irim Klivishon, and that does cook the food, at least the outermost part of the food, and that's the problem. The Kosher game, for sure, Im Yamadein Rechakala Tanur, Abuzaka Kachlin, I think that means some kind of a tear or something. If your person mamish takes the tea leaves and put it onto the fire, even though Rashbam would agree, that's for sure in the Seder Eis. But now it gets a little bit more close to our topic. Let's make it to klisheni. Instead of putting the tea leaves onto the fire, or instead of pouring directly onto the tea leaves, let's pour the water into a cup. And then put the tea bag inside. What's wrong with that? That's klisheni, right? After all, we learned to sugar together. First in Rambam comes klisheni and in Vasho. Gamkin, sir, says Mishabur, no way. Why? Because the Kaimelon Besiv Zed, the Dovish Lobaba Chamkle Hashamas, and Shonim Shasafuba klisheni. The Koshigel of Fimash of Avur Besiv Zed, the Ejvam Rakim Kali Habishu, Shem is Bashlam, a Philip Hadachim of klisheni, Efshad Yesh Ba'alam Gamkin, Chashash, Esad Yaraisa Philip. Says the Mishnah Berurah, if there's a real concern of these tea bags, these tea leaves, being Kali Abishol, so forget it. So it's also B'daraisa, and it's Kali Abishol, it's a Mishnah, and trumps all the kulos of Klisheni, and therefore you cannot make tea in a Klisheni. That was the famous psak of the Mishnah Berurah. So there is a famous psak from Reb Chaim Brisker, from Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, where Reb Chaim disagreed with this Mishnah Berurah. Reb Chaim held that you are permitted, even lechatchila, to make tea in a Klisheni. How did that happen exactly? What happened to the whole cheshbon of the Mishnah Berurah? It's Kali Abishol. Reb Chaim denied Kali Abishol. Reb Chaim denied the Mishnah. Reb Chaim denied the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what did that mean? Why did Reb Chaim say that it's mutter? So Reb Chaim said it's mutter based on the following. We take a look at the fifth of the Maamar Kamos. The Mishnah tells us, "Ilfos v'kedera shavir merusachim." If you have a pan or a pot that was taken off the fire, it's still very hot. Loyitin l'sochem tavlin. You're not allowed to put spices, raw spices, into this pot of water. That's called the klivishon. Even though it's no longer on the fire, that still retains the status of a klivishon. Aval, what you can do, says the Mishnah, is no sudul asocha karlos apatamcha. You could pour the water into a bowl or into a plate, and then you can put the spices, the raw, unyet cooked spices, into that klisheni. So the Mishnah says, pemole, Mishnah says explicitly, you can put spices into a klisheni. But the Mishnah didn't know the other Mishnah. What happened to the din of Kali Abishol? So obviously, the Mishnah, the Tanaim are telling us, not everything is Kali Abishol. Remember, we said oil is not Kali Abishol. It must be that spice. They're not Kali Abishol either. That's exactly what Reb Chaim argued. So Reb Chaim said, it's true, we're machmer, that everything is a chashash Kali Abishol, but not everything. Whatever Chazal said is mutter. So says Reb Chaim, a tea bag is a spice. It's there to spice up the water a little bit. I'm having a hot cup of water, and a hot cup doesn't taste so good. So I put a little bit of a tea bag in. So I get a little bit of a flavoring. So I get my herbal teas, get a little more of a flavoring. So I got my tea. So says Reb Chaim that therefore this is the age-old tavlin of the Mishnah, and this trumps all the chumras of Kali Abishol, a famous psak of Reb Chaim. The way the story goes, and again, I don't know if it's a story or legend, I'm not sure exactly. I've heard different versions of it, so I can't tell you. It's all the same basic story, so it probably happened to some degree. Somebody once saw the Rav making tea in a klisheni on Shabbos. So they asked him, the Rebbe, the Mishabura, says it's a serious problem. It's chashash, maybe a kalibes, shalva deraisa. So one version of the story was that the Rav responded back, my grandfather also knew how to learn, and he had it was okay. That was one version. The other version was, my grandfather was a Shemir Shabbos, and he used to make tikkun. So it's true, Reb Chaim knew how to learn, and he was Shemir Shabbos, and it's all three true, and he also made tikkun Shabbos. So the bottom line is, Reb Chaim held it was tafel. So why didn't the Mishnah Berurah hold the way? Many of the posts, could be most of the posts, didn't hold it because Reb Chaim. So what did the other posts say? What happened to this sugya of tafel? So it's quoted in the name of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shlomo Zalman said that tavlin, if you think about it, why is tavlin automatically not Kali Abishal? What is it about tavlin that makes it not Kali Abishal? So Shlomo Zalman explained, Kali Abishal is pretty much a Metzias kind of a thing. Kali Abishal, you get the impression from the Gemara, is very soft, you know, very light, very thin, easily cooked kind of thing. A big piece of a side of beef is not Kali Abishal. A big piece of chicken is not Kali Abishal. Little soft, tender things are Kali Abishal. So says Shlomo Zalman, in the olden days, you know what spices were about? A person said, I wanted to go buy cinnamon. I think you went to the McCormick shelf with a little ground up cinnamon. You went to get a big fat piece of cinnamon, like horseradish, like those people who use the old chrein for the Seder. So, you have a big stick of a humongous, thick, root or something. That was the tavlin. So you took that cinnamon and threw it into your pot. You took that horseradish and threw it into your pot. So comes the Shlomo Zalman and says, that makes sense. That's not a Kali Abishal. That's like a big piece of meat. That's not a Kali Abishal. But our spices, says Shlomo Zalman, it's hard to, if our spices are not Kali Abishal, so what is Kali Abishal? Kali Abishal means very, very soft. Tea bags, you have a look inside a tea bag, it's like this big. So it's as easily cooked as anything possible. So says Shlomo Zalman, that's why the Mishnah Berurah in the earlier post didn't apply the principle of tavlin to our spices, our tea bags, our tea leaves, our cinnamon, our peppers. That's not Kali Abishal. That's not non-Kali Abishal. Eimcha Kali Abishal, God means that. So you have a machloekis, but a kotzel a kotzel. You have between the Mishnah Berurah and support of Rav Shlomo Zalman against Reb Chaim Rav about what is the status of this tea bag. So let's assume for a minute lechumrah. Let's assume that we're not going to run to go make tea in a cliche. And you were nervous about the Mishnah Berurah. We follow Mishnah Berurah. So is that that's the end of Tipa Shabbos? So there was a further machloekis in Rav Moshe and others. What's also in a cliche? Can it be mutter to klishlishi? So Rav Moshe said klishlishi ainu mavashal klalu klalu klalu. All for everything. Everything goes, even Kali Abishal, everything's mutter. Klishlishi is already too far removed. And many other poskim said back to Rav Moshe, the term klishlishi doesn't appear in the Gemara. It doesn't appear in the Rishonim, doesn't appear in the Shulchan. I mean, it's a little bit in Rishonim, for sure not in the Gemara. It's not conventional in the Rishonim. And therefore, many poskim argued, there's no concept of klishlishi. Whatever's not a kli Rishon is a klisheni. Klisheni, v'chulei, 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 v'hala. So a kli asiri is the same. It's a klisheni. It's all the same thing. So if you hold that klisheni is a problem, then klishlish is also a problem. So it's interesting because one of the Gedolei Apostles who disagreed with Ramosh was the Rav. The Rav said that the concept of klishlish doesn't make any sense. Okay, but the Rav held you could do it in a klisheni. So it ends up a little bit funny that Bein Lefi the Rav, Bein Lefi Ramosh, he can make tea in a klishlish. Because according to the Rav, it's supposed to even in a klisheni like his grandfather. According to Ramosh, it was chayshish rishabur, said it's supposed to be a klishlish. But believe it or not, many, many poskim, could be most poskim, held maybe neither of those schools are correct. That we shouldn't go run. That Reb Chaim was a Das Yochid. Probably most posts can disagree with Reb Chaim. That Chiddush Reb Moshe Chazanish didn't like it. A lot of posts didn't like that Chiddush Reb Moshe. So if you want to really, truly have your tea on Shabbos, probably should not be making it on Shabbos. You should probably figure out a way to make it from before. That became the basis for many, many families make the tea sense. That means it's pre-cooked, it's pre-made. That's a whole other ballgame. I had to deal with that. But those who try to avoid legami, the whole making of tea from scratch on Shabbos, they don't want to get involved. Not a klisheni, not a klishlishi, klirvi. We don't get involved any of these shilas. There shouldn't be any. All tea is a chashash of kali abishal, and all kalim a chashash of klisheni, and everything's off limits. So the question is, where does this place us now in terms of leaving out the tea for a moment, going back to the peppers? So pepper, to the best of my knowledge, the pepper is not pre-cooked in the factory. So many of the spices, I don't know which ones are, which are not. The pepper, to the best of my knowledge, is not pre-cooked. And now the question is, I want to pour some pepper into my soup on Shabbos. So just how serious a shallow is that? So to pour that pepper into a pot of soup, to pour that into a bowl of soup, that's really, really tricky. That's a cliche-ni. And again, according to Reb Chaim, it's probably okay. According to Reb Chaim, it's tavlin, and it's hard not to call tavlin. And according to Reb Chaim, tavlin cool applies even bisman hazeh. So somehow Reb Chaim didn't understand that idea like Reb Shlomo Zalman. So if Reb Chaim was willing to say that the tea leaves, the tea bags are not tavlin, so it's hard to believe that the peppers are tavlin. So according to not tavlin, so according to Reb Chaim, that our spices, our peppers should probably be part of the sugya of the Mishnah that says that no sosocha ka'ara, you're allowed to put the spices. You eat tavos of a ka'ara. According to the non-Reb Chaim people, according to Mishnah Berurah, according to Shlomo Zalman, the Ramosha, that whole camp that believed that not so fast, not so simple. We can't just all of a sudden put things into cliche. And everything is a chashash of Kalei Abisho. So l'chora it should be a problem. Unless one argues that our bowl of soup is already a cliche. Now, again, according to Ramosha, that'll make a difference. According to non-Ramosha people, that won't make a difference. But even according to Ramosha, it's not at all simple what our bowl of soup is. Very, very long, Mishnah Shailah. I'm sitting down Friday night to my bowl of soup, and I just have a lump of shashat to ask. Is this a klisheni or is this a klishlishi? There's a famous, this part is really not true, so this is just a joke story. A famous story about, a supposed story about a woman walks to, brings a cup of tea to her husband on Friday night. By mistake, she drops and she spills it. Oh, yeah, I just murdered myself. So she said, what do you mean? It's a klishlishi. She said, oh, good, bro. It feels so bad. So bottom line is, what is our soup? So why would we think that our soup is anything more than a klisheni? Because our soup, most of the time, definitely if your wives are serving the soup, I can tell you that, the soup did not get from the pot directly to the bowl. It went through a ladle. I mean, if you're really, you know, in Shiva Shabbaton or something, so they're just sticking we'll leave any other options that soup might have gotten into. So let's say, assuming you're pouring it directly from the pot, literally tipping over the pot and pouring it to the bowl, so that's klisheni. But most normal people don't do that. They stick a ladle in and then they scoop it out and put it into the bowl. So this is a lum de shashayla. What is the ladle? Does the ladle count as a klisheni, thereby making the bowl a klishlishi, therefore mitigating it, and at least you have a moisha to rely on? Or do I say, no, the ladle doesn't change anything. What's the shayla? So the ladle is very funny because on the one hand, it's a kli, so it should count towards removing it from the kli. On the other hand, the ladle went right into the pot. So maybe the ladle becomes like part of the pot. So the ladle, whatever's in the ladle is like buckled to the pot. So maybe it doesn't count as an additional kli. So this is an old question. It actually appears in the Tosfos of Maseches Avodah Zarah. The context of Tosfos is talking about kashering certain kind of kalim. We know there's a rule of kashering, kabolo kach poto. How it went in, that's how it goes out. So let's say if something had a belief, something had an absorption of taste in a kli rishon, so you got to get it out through a kli rishon. If something had an absorption of taste through an iri kli rishon, let's say you poured something treif onto it, but it wasn't literally in the pot, so then you can kasher it actually by pouring as well. That's what many people are making when they kasher their sinks. So our sinks, according to many poskim, is the worst case scenario. It's an iru. It's not a pot. It means you're afraid that, let's say before Pesach, so you for the last 12 months, you've been pouring soups and all kind of hot stuff into the sink. So you pour noodle soup throughout the course of the year into the sinks. So you had an iru from a kli rishon when you kasher it on Pesach. So you don't have to take your sink and put it into a pot of water. You can take water from a pot and pour it onto the sink. It's the same way that it went in through Iri, go out through Iri as well. So the Tosfos in Maseches Avodah Zarah discusses the following, that some people, when they want to kasher something, so it's a big hassle to take a big boiling pot of water and to pour it onto something, they want to use an intermediary. So what do they use? The Yesh Mesibin Ka'ora B'soch Machvas L'Esh, that big pan on the fire of boiling water. So they take a little plate, or we would call it a ladle, Acher Sichas Olas Tocha Ka'ora, until the water mamish inside that little bowl is boiling, and they pour from that, they take it out of the pot and then pour it onto whatever item they're trying to catch. So it says Tosfos, I'm not sure that works. Is that like pouring out of a kli rishon, or is that already once removed? What's the problem? That's our shayla. Because when you put the ladle or the bowl, whatever you want to call it, into the pot, does it become like the pot? Or does it take on its own entity? It becomes the next step. So here in kashering, we want it to be like the pot. In Hilchos Shabbos, we don't want it to be like the pot. But the Ri says we're not sure. Then the Ri continues. And he says that we should be machmir in this. He's not sure. But then there was another shayla about what was called Maligas Tanigos. This Tanigos was a very, very common shayla in the old days. Not too relevant for us anymore. But when you shech the chicken, so you have to get all the blood out of the chicken. So you have to kasher it. So you can't cook the chicken first, because if you cook the chicken first, then all the blood gets moved around through the bishul process. It's not going to come out through malicha anymore. So you have to kash the chicken when it's still raw. The problem was that they wanted to get the feathers off the chicken, because it's very hard to kash it when it's all full of all the feathers. So the best way to get the feathers off is to first boil up the chicken, And that softens up the feathers. You know, so the skin, they can just pluck off the feathers much, much easier. So that's what the goyim do it. So they take a chicken, they slaughter the chicken, they throw the chicken into a big vat of boiling water, and then they pluck it, take off the feathers. In halacha, you can't do that, because if you can throw it into a pot of water, that's going to be mevashal it first. And once you mevashal it, then you can no longer kasher it. So they had to come up with all kind of kuntzim to get the feathers off without ruining the possibility for kashering. So one suggestion was to pour boiling water onto the chicken rather than putting the chicken into the pot. So maybe if you hold that pouring boiling water onto the chicken, maybe that's not so bad. So what do you mean it's not so bad? That's terrible. That's irikli rishon. So what some people used to do is they would put a ladle into the boiling pot, then they would pour from the ladle onto the chicken, saying, oh, it's already klisheini, it's already not a problem. Says the Reno, the Re wasn't sure. Does the ladle make it to klisheini or not make it to klisheini? So therefore he was machmir in all directions. So he wouldn't let you kasha with a ladle, because maybe it's a klisheini. He wouldn't let you pour it onto the unyet kasha chickens, because maybe it's a kli rishon. So according to this Tosfos, we are not sure what to do with ladles. And therefore, just to take this attitude, well, your soup in your bowl, everything's good, everything's hunky-dory because it went through the ladle, we're not 100% convinced that that is true. Some posts can differentiate and say, it may depend on how long the ladle was in the pot. If the ladle was sitting in the pot for a long, long period of time, and for sure it comes to kli rishon. So we're not thrilled to automatically say soup in bowls is automatically kli shlishi. Not so simple. And we're also not so sure that kli shlishi even does anything. So if you ask me, I would say that it's probably better not to put the pepper, the not cooked yet spices, into your bowl of soup for a variety of reasons. Number one, it could be that this is just classically shiny. And if it's a classically shiny, if the ladle doesn't really help you, it's classically shiny. And although, again, according to Reb Chaim, it's mutter, but according to the Mishnah Berurah, it's a serious problem. And even a matzah that you're willing to be made that the ladle hiked you up a little bit and got you down to the next level of kli, we're not 100% sure that even helps. Because Reb Moshe was mechadish that, but we're not 100% sure that that's, everyone agrees that. We know that many people disagree with that. Therefore, if you ask me, I would say, lechet chila, to start pouring your spices into your bowl of soup on Friday night, I don't think it's such a great idea. So the truth is that I was sitting there at the table Friday night, and some people started to do it. So I just felt very hesitant. I wasn't about to go give a whole shitzloli at the time. It got me thinking maybe I'll wait till Wednesday night. So I held off with the shitzloli. Yeah, should be listening. Chaim held was butter. And then, you know, and other svaras, maybe the whole Kalei Bishul's a chumra. So, you know, I'm not even sure. So there are a few tzadar b'hachol. And then I noticed as I started to taste the soup, wasn't that hot. Anyway, I'm not even sure the soup was yatzal lettuce bowl. If the soup was not hot enough that you pull your hand away and touch, then it's not mevashal anything. So it was enough to keep quiet, enough not to make a whole fuss about it at the table. But if you ask me on the side whether it's better to put your pepper into your soup on Shabbos, I'd probably tell you it's better to, if you learn the whole shiur, the mile of this sugi is, if you learn the whole shiur, by the time you're finishing what to do, then the soup is cold, b'chol adayas, if it's cold soup, you can be sure put your pepper. Yeah.
What point does the kli rishon stop being
kli rishon?
Is it when it's no longer
yatzal? But it's not yatzal lesbon. Yeah, the dips beneath the yatzal lesbon. So hold on, make this hell the hell out there. Okay, good. Okay.
Did they take it from the cat?